Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
What we learned investigating the death of Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez.
It sounds like you ran almost every theory to its end.
Binge all 8 episodes of Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Film Week on KPCC. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us. The documentary Operation Varsity Blues, the college admissions scandal, focuses on a very close-to-home scandal. The docudrama follows a college admissions counselor who helped wealthy parents and celebrities buy their kids' ways into prominent universities, including USC and UCLA. Our John Horn talked with the director of Operation Varsity Blues, Chris Smith, about exposing the system riddled with privilege and whether it's changeable.
The poster for your film says, and I know you probably didn't write this, the man behind the scandal. And it feels like it could have been called the scandal behind the man, which is to say that Rick Singer and the parents who worked with him and cheated their way to get their kids into school, that's ultimately a symptom of a bigger problem. Do you buy that argument?
I mean, I think it's as you've rightly pointed out, it's more complex than just boiling it down to one person in one situation. I think, you know, part of our, we knew that we couldn't tell the full story in a movie. I think, you know, our hope and goal was just to be a small part of a greater conversation.
What does Rick Singer give you as a storyteller to animate that larger conversation? Because your movie is obviously about what he did, but it's also about the whole process and how ridiculous and unfair and skewed it is. How does he allow you to tell that bigger story?
I think having something like this happen, it gives the audience something to grasp onto, right? You know, if you're going to make a movie that's just about education, I think you're going to have a hard time finding an audience. And so you have this as sort of an entryway. And I think that, you know, to me, one of the things, you know, that I wasn't aware of was just how big this independent education consultant world was, you know, and you know, a lot of the people that we met and interviewed, you know, were great. And in a lot of ways felt like, you know, I think one of them even said, you know, they'd be happy if their industry went away, you know, that they felt that it was creating a two-tiered system and that it wasn't fair, that certain kids, you know, had an advantage over others in terms of trying to get into the schools that they wanted to get into.
I want to ask you a couple things about Rick Singer. His story is well known to some, but maybe not completely well known to others. He describes this thing called the front door, the back door, and the side door. And the front door is apply to school like everybody else does and hope you get in. The back door is give a lot of money to the school and hope that helps. But I think there's a person in the film that says even if you gave $20 million to Stanford, it wasn't enough to matter. And then there's the side door. What is the side door and how did Rick Singer exploit it?
You know, in the film, you see him working with coaches from different universities. And the idea was that he would be able to use some of the slots that were allotted to their individual programs as ways to get students into those particular universities.
He focuses on what somebody calls niche sports, things like sailing and crew, because they're not as widely examined. Why do those sports work better for somebody like Rick Singer?
I think it was something that was more, you know, you could fly under the radar, I think, a little more easily in those places. And maybe, you know, in the case of the sailing coach, you know, we didn't try to exonerate or, you know, condemn. We just sort of wanted, you know, I think John Vandermore felt like he had more to say about his story. And so we interviewed him about that. You know, I think in his case, one of the challenges that he expressed was just finding good candidates, you know. And I think that in some ways, Rick pitched himself as not only a solution to fundraising, but also somebody that could provide, you know, potential, you know, worthwhile candidates.
I think one of the things that's obvious in this film is that Singer was very good at what he did, not just in the mechanics, but in the psychology. that he groomed parents, quite honestly. And this sounds weird, but almost the way a pedophile might groom a victim, exploiting a weakness, playing up fears, being the only one who is really looking after them. I mean, he obviously, you know, did a lot of things that were illegal, but he also was a mastermind in gaining people's confidence. How did he do that? And why were people so willing to trust him?
It was probably a slippery slope for many. I think that, you know, he was often, I think he did actually have a legitimate consulting business. I think many people were introduced to him by other parents that they trusted, you know, and I don't know, you know, without talking to the parents and without talking to everyone involved, you're only speculating. But, you know, I think when you look at the way that our country operates, you know, we have a, you know, in many cases, there's a system in place, like at an amusement park where, you know, if you spend more money, you get a fast pass and you can cut the line. And I think that for many people, you would assume, oh, if you're wealthy and connected, that there's a way to get your kid in the school. And I don't know. Again, this is just speculation, but I wondered if once you were introduced to him, if you were just, if it was just that moment of like, oh, this is how that's done. You know, like this is, if you want to pay to get your kid in school, this is the way that that works. And so maybe it didn't seem as sort of nefarious as it's been sort of portrayed in the media today to them at the moment.
But there's also something more to that, and that is that these parents, in some cases, seem to be operating kind of like Little League parents. Maybe they weren't athletes, but want their kids to be. That's the Little League analogy. So maybe they didn't go to elite schools, but they want their kids to. Or, as somebody says in your film, they're obsessed with what this person calls the relentless pursuit of the trappings of power. Which means, I think, the child of a rich and prominent couple can't possibly go to Arizona State, because that means we're not as 1% as we seem. And that's actually a conversation that Lori Loughlin and her husband, Massimo Giannulli, had, that our daughter can't go to Arizona State. We have to go to someplace better. That the college of their kids is almost a referendum on their, not just their parenting, but their status in the world. Does that track?
You touch on so many things that I think we're probably, you know, that for each case, it was probably a little different. You know, was it, I would be, you know, embarrassed if my kid didn't go to like a top school. What does that say about me? What does that say about my kid? You know, is it, you know, I didn't have these opportunities in life, so I want to give my, you know, children these opportunities to go to a great school. Did I not get to go to Harvard and I want to like live through them and go to Harvard? So, you know, there's, again, many of the people we talk to in the film express these different sentiments, and I think it's probably a combination of, you know, for each case is probably a little bit different.
But the whole idea of what is a top school is almost a kind of a creation, and I think you trace it back to U.S. News and World Report and their college rankings, that it becomes kind of a self-perpetuating myth. But you can send your kid to, you know, one of 1,000 schools and they can get a good education if they want to. But the idea of the top school is something that seems to drive so much of what is kind of corrupting the process right now.
We had a number of people that talked about that, you know, there's a number of schools in this country where you can get a great education, right? So, you know, if that's really what it's about, then we should try to take that pressure off and the stigma off of like these top schools being the end all be all, right? And so I think in that way, that's really valid. I think the unknown in the equation is this sort of, you know, is there some, you know, networking effect that comes into play when you go to a school with other wealthy, powerful, you know, kids of wealthy and powerful people, right? Does that sort of give you a leg up? And that's like, you know, I think in terms of the education part of it, I do believe that you can get a great education at any school if it really comes down to you. But I think that that's sort of the unknown that people are talking about.
But also for those quote unquote top schools, they have a real stake in getting people to apply who won't get in, because they can then say, look how elite we are. And on the other side of the equation, there are a lot of high schools that say, our school is great because we get X number or X percent of kids into Ivies.
You know, everything's a business at the end, right? Like, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it's hard to understand everyone's motivations, but you can definitely see, you know, just going off of what you said, that there would be an incentive for a school to try to get kids to go to better schools so that they could then use that as a way to continue other kids coming to their school. So, you know, I think you have to look behind all these statistics and sort of facts to try to understand what the motivation might be.
We'll continue with John Orne's conversation with the director of Operation Varsity Blues, Chris Smith. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Let's get right back to John Orne's conversation with director Chris Smith, who did Operation Varsity Blues, the college admission scandal.
One of the things you do that is both genius and completely compelling is use the transcripts from FBI wiretaps and some court declarations to provide the dialogue for your actors. How early did that decision happen? And there's probably a lot of hours of FBI recordings. How'd you get access to it? And what did you end up finding was the best material to use?
So I collaborated with my editor from the Fyre Festival movie, and he's the one that really dove into this affidavit that was released. And within that, there were a lot of these transcripts of FBI wiretaps. And to us, it was, you know, we sort of had a hunch that we might not get Rick Singer, we might not get the parents, you know, especially with a case that was unfolding. And people still dealing with like either pleading guilty, not guilty, with awaiting sentencing. So for us, it was fascinating because it gave you a window into this world that, you know, otherwise had, you know, been that you wouldn't have access to. And so for us, it felt like a really, you know, it gave a voice to the parents and to Rick, just in terms of getting a better understanding of how everything actually worked and sort of the way that they talked about, you know, about this actual process.
And they talk about their kids. I mean, there's one parent who talks about, I think it's two daughters, one of whom I think she says isn't that smart, or words to that effect. And so you're hearing people reveal like really like personal and hurtful things about their own children.
When we're working on a documentary, it's like you're often trying to, you know, capture some intimacy, right? And so I think when we were reading through these transcripts, you realize that it was almost as raw and genuine as you could get, because they were oftentimes, you know, neither party knew that they were actually being recorded. You know, obviously once Rick started working with the FBI, that changed, but in large part on the parent side, that they were unaware. And so you're getting these sort of unfiltered conversations. And so from a documentary perspective, it felt like you were getting almost like as real as it could be in terms of, you know, the conversations that were being had.
There's so much complicity in this story by people who either look the other way or don't question why, you know, some random person is giving all this money to a sailing program. But then there's some heroes. There's somebody who works in admissions at Marymount High School, where Lori Loughlin's kids went, and he sees that one of her kids is going to USC on a crew scholarship and knows that she doesn't row or work or cox on a crew team, and raises alarms. It doesn't seem like there are a lot of people like this person, that most people are happy to look the other way. And I think without this Marymount admissions officer, maybe the whole thing doesn't unravel quite as fast as it did.
I mean, it's, you know, again, it would require multiple films to get into all the, you know, small details. But, you know, the way that Rick, from what we could ascertain, was sort of how it came down, was that somebody was actually arrested on an unrelated charge and sort of offered this up as, you know, to try to help his case. So, or at least his, you know, some leniency in his situation. So it's interesting that, like, you know, you're watching this and you're thinking like, this is so precarious, just like if anybody, you know, that there would be so many vulnerabilities to a scam like this. But I think the one thing that, you know, he mentions in one call is like, you know, I'm not going to say anything and to the parent. And, you know, I think that that argument is, you know, if everyone that's involved in it has a lot to lose, then you can hopefully think that you're safe in terms of keeping it quiet.
One of the things that happens in this story, kind of as the larger story, is that some of the kids didn't know what was happening. Some probably did. You don't get into that story specifically, but are the children just as much a victim here as the way that Rick Singer exploited the process?
Yeah, I would definitely say, you know, in many cases, it seemed like the parents were going out of their way to keep the children from knowing. You know, I think they wanted them to feel like they got in on their own merit and that, you know, that they weren't sort of helped by this process. So I think in some ways, you know, they definitely feel like one of the bigger victims in the story just because of, you know, something that they didn't do on their own accord and sort of ended up as collateral damage.
I watched this film and certainly thought back to how my college admissions process was, and it was very simple and didn't have a lot of help. Did you think back about how you applied to college and what the process was like when you were growing up?
I mean, yeah, mine was very simple. I, you know, a state school and a school that my sister went to, and that was it, you know? And so I don't remember doing the test prep. I don't remember much of anything, but I don't know if the industry was that big then, you know, it feels like that's something that's really evolved. I know when we interviewed the people in Sacramento, they said Rick was one of the first people to do that kind of work in Sacramento, which was after I went to college. So if that business really was thriving and sort of exploding in the 90s, you know, that was after my time. So yeah, mine, you know, it feels very innocent and sort of the way that it, you know, it used to be, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's also very important for parents to remember the best school for your kid is the school that wants your kid, not the school that you want your kid to go to.
You know, the one thing that we keep coming back to and thinking about is just sort of, you know, what is the network effect of these like elite institutions in terms of the people that you're associated with and that you develop relationships with. But aside, in terms of actual education, it definitely does feel like, you know, a lot of it is what you put into it. And so, you know, I think if people can come away from this and sort of take that pressure off a little bit and sort of just realize that, you know, that you can get a great education at a number of places and maybe we don't have to put so much intense scrutiny and focus on getting into this handful of schools, and maybe that's, you know, a positive.
Let me ask you this last thing. Obviously, Rick Singer and a lot of the people he worked with were caught, but it does feel like there's still some fundamental inequities in the whole process. And some people have some ideas in your film about what can change, but it doesn't feel as if things are going to change quickly or going to change in a way that materially benefits people other than the, you know, top 1-3% in the nation.
Yeah, but I think we're seeing like societal change in increments, you know, every year you're seeing just different advancements. And so you just hope that, you know, in education that you can see similar progress. And you know, I don't think that we were trying to go into this to give the roadmap of how to fix things necessarily. It was more just to say, you know, this is a story that happened. Here's some, you know, people that are much more well-versed than we are in the space talking about their feelings about it. And sort of, you know, you just hope that you're a small part of a greater conversation around this topic and that the dialogue continues and evolves and maybe there is something, you know, some meaningful change at the end.
That's KPECC's John Horn talking with Chris Smith. He directed the new docudrama Operation Varsity Blues, the college admission scandal. It's streaming on Netflix. It's Film Week on KPECC 89.3 and the KPECC app. Want to remind you to make your reservation for the 19th annual Film Week Academy Awards preview. That's coming up Sunday of next weekend, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. KPECC.org/in-person. Have a great weekend.
Support comes from Ciclavia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclavia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclavia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.